Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Anna, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Ant.
Hi.
Hello.
This week, we are talking about the year 777.
Bingo.
777.
Wait, the year 777,777.
Exactly. I'd like us all to give a prediction for what Earth will be like then. 777, way back in the day. And let's have our three-word summaries. Will?
Known for wifing.
For wifing.
Nice.
I love wifing as a word. I'm so glad it's caught on. Ant?
Time ain't real.
Time.
Sorry, time ain't real.
Correct.
Uh-huh. This is going to be
just
great.
Instantly makes me so nervous.
No. You should be nervous because you're going to have your mind blown.
I can't
there
wait.
There you go. Brilliant.
Well, mine's fairly straightforward. War, peace, library. And all my questions have been answered, so let's go ahead and get started. All right, I'm going first today, and I'm going to take us back to the Muslim world and things that were happening in it very near to the year 777.
Okay, yeah.
Which is great. Because there was a thing that happened in 777, but I couldn't really explain it without giving context. So here we go.
Okay,
all right. So in the early 700s, the Islamic world is ruled by the Umayyad Caliphate. They're in charge, but by the middle of the century, they've got some challengers called the Abbasids. And the Abbasids were descended from a man named Abbas, hence Abbasids. Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward. And Abbas was one of the uncles of the Prophet Muhammad, who came from the same clan as him. So the Abbasids claim to be the Prophet's true successors by having a closer bloodline to him than the Umayyads, who were in charge.
Because everyone's always succeeded by their uncle.
Exactly. Uncles and nephews are, it's the way to go.
Yeah. Okay.
And in 743, the Umayyad caliph dies, and there's a bit of a power vacuum, and the Abbasids realize this is their time to sort of rush in and fill the vacuum and establish their
Bosshood.
Yeah, exactly. The Abbasids. I just as a sidebar, you guys have ruined me because now I really want to pronounce it dynasty, which sounds really stupid coming from me.
Yeah, Duck Dynasty. That's how you say it.
Duck Dynasty. All right. So in 747, the Abbasids kick off a revolt. They fight for a few years. And in 750, they're victorious. And a man named Asafa is proclaimed caliph. And does anyone want to guess what Asafa means?
Asafa? Big good dude.
Big good dude?
Gingerbread man.
Will's closest, it's Bloodshedder.
Oh my God.
That yeah. sounds like a boss orc.
Yeah.
Like, you know, from yeah. Lord of the Rings.
And it's a little unclear if he chose, so this is his lakab, this is his like nickname title, honorific. And it's a little unclear if he chose Bloodshedder because he was a Bloodshedder or if it was to intimidate his enemies. Mm. But he does sort of live up to the name because he exiles the last Umayyad ruler, then has him and every male member of his family, except for one, executed.
Mm. It's really compensating, I suppose, for being a gingerbread man. which is not fearsome or intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but that's the famous gingerbread ruse. They lure you into mm-hmm. this false sense of security, and then they...
Can I make a prediction on the story?
Yeah.
That one person, that one boy he didn't uh-huh. kill, he's going to regret this.
I guess we'll find out.
We will.
Yep. So Asafa only rules for 4 years because he dies of smallpox in 754. And he's succeeded by his brother Al-Mansur, who is really considered the founding caliph of the Abbasid dynasty, because he's the one who consolidates power and solidifies the Abbasids as the preeminent ruling dynasty of the Muslim world. Al-Mansur has a bumpy first few years in charge. There's lots of revolts popping up all over the place, but he squashes them pretty handily, even though he is not the Bloodshedder. But he is ultimately caliph for 22 years, dying in 775, which is famously just 2 years away from the year we're supposed to be talking about.
So close.
And would you like to guess what his lakab means, what Al-Mansur means?
Cake. Banisher.
Are you guys hungry?
I think so.
Gingerbread and cake?
I don't know. Cuddle fiend.
Cuddle fiend?
Owl neck.
Owl. Those are both better than what it actually is, which is the victorious.
Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, these guys are pretty good at choosing their names. There's a lot of bloodshed and stuff I could talk about, like Al-Mansur imprisoning and killing his uncle or assassinating his army general after he got too popular. But honestly, we've heard too many stories like that. So I'm going to talk about something entirely different. Urban planning.
Yes,
finally!
This is what I want.
Yep. So one of the many things that Al-Mansur does is he realizes that he has to solidify the Abbasid's position on the throne. And in order to do that, he has to move the capital away from Damascus, uh-huh. where the Umayyads had have it. So he decides to construct a brand new city. And that city is... Baghdad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's where the famous Baghdad roundabouts.
Baghdad roundabouts. It's all down to him.
Yeah.
Multi-story car parks.
Yeah. I've heard both of you complain about the overly strict zoning ordinances in Baghdad more times than I can count.
So tough to set up a food stall there.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't believe it.
It all goes back to this guy, Al-Mansur, whose name actually means the...
Al-Neck.
Lollipop. The lollipop man.
Good. So Al-Mansur chooses a site along the eastern bank of the Tigris River, strategically positioned to facilitate trade and communication between the eastern and western regions of the caliphate, which is now quite sprawling and gets even bigger during the Abbasid rule. And since this is the Fertile Crescent, the land is also fertile.
Yeah.
And crescent shape.
you really can just plow as many crescents out of that thing as you want. Really.
I know, they're just all over the place. So the proximity to water is a huge advantage.
For life?
For life, yeah. And that's this guy, Al-Mansur, he's the first one to realize that in all of human history. So he's a really smart guy.
Everything else was like Dune before that.
Yeah.
In our still suits.
Just spice. There was already a small settlement called Baghdad, which probably comes from older Iranian words, bag meaning God and dad meaning gifted. So God gifted. But Al-Mansur builds on top of this older settlement, greatly expands it, and it becomes comes to be known as Madinat as-Salam, or the City of Peace, which is ironic because there's a word in Arabic, Baghdad, slightly different pronunciation, which means hate.
Oh, wow.
But what are you going to do? Al-Mansur...
Wait, Medina just means city.
Medina means city. As-Salam means peace.
Oh. City.
Yeah, Medinat as-Salam, City of Peace.
Oh, City of Peace City.
There's just the one Medina.
Oh, but no,
it's
but,
not
but
it's like, not Medina al-Salam Medina.
Is it not Medina al-Salam City?
No.
Does it not say that on the road sign? Welcome to Medina al-Salam City.
I think it probably doesn't say that.
It's like that place in England that's got like hill, 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 hill. There's a place where it's got like turn up down hill or something. Or like,
oh, turnips again. How do we switch you off? I think you need a reboot.
What's happening?
Yeah, I don't know. So in Medina to Salam, Medina, Al-Mansur lines up huge resources for the project. Allegedly, 100,000 workers build the city for 4 years at a cost of 18 million dinars, mm-hmm. which is, of course, 100 million dirhams.
Sorry, I didn't understand it.
Sorry, can you convert dirhams to 1977 gold bars? That'd be great.
Yeah, the size that could fill a freight train shaped cavern. So the workers start in late July 762 because two astrologers believed that the city should be built under the sign of Leo, the lion, who is associated with fire. I guess that's a good thing. Not historically for a city, but symbolizes productivity, pride, and expansion, which is great. And they also built the city in a circle, which I think is just very cool. So there's this historical sort of circle, which is the old city, and then stuff was built up around it. And within a generation of its establishment, Baghdad had already become a hub of commerce and, more importantly, learning. there's one thing I love more than urban planning. It's urban learning.
Medicine.
Medicine. Yes.
Yeah.
Medicine.
That's the word that pops into my head.
They learned that.
Philosophy.
Philosophy. They love science, astronomy, astrology.
Computer science.
Yep. There's a big hub for that. A lot of like vocational schools where you could learn how to be a programmer.
Gender criticality.
Famously, yes.
Jet propulsion.
Underwater basket weaving. All of the things.
Oh.
And it was the preeminent intellectual center in the Muslim world, and then perhaps the world at large, because at this time, a lot of other places are kind of famously in a dark age. So Baghdad is the place you want to go. And Al-Mansur was also the person who spearheaded the famous Abbasid translation movement, wherein he and his scholars rounded up thousands of ancient texts in Sanskrit and Greek and other languages to translate them. And this included works by Ptolemy. It included Elements by Euclid, which I'm given to understand is about math or something. And in fact, this translation movement is the reason we have a lot of ancient Greek texts to this day, because if they hadn't been translated into Arabic and then later into other languages, they probably would have been lost. What with the various collapses of Greek civilization over the years. And the heart of this translation movement was something called the Beit al-Hikmah, or the House of Wisdom, which was a massive library, an intellectual hub, and a place that scholars from all around the world came together to flock to translate in. It just sounds like paradise, honestly. If you just plot me down in Baghdad in the late 760s, and
yeah,
I'll be
sure
as happy
great.
As a clam.
Yeah.
No notes. Yep. So anyway, as I mentioned, Al-Mansur dies in 775. There are a couple of conflicting accounts about his death, but one that I liked said that he was buried in Mecca, and 100 graves were dug around the city as decoys so that nobody could find his actual grave to violate it. Just smart. Although you think it wouldn't actually take you that long to pilfer all 100 and find
really?
The one that had
one
the body
person
in it.
The shovel,
yeah,
I
that's
get
true.
Through more
that's
than,
true.
What, two or three a night?
Two really? Or three a night, yeah. And you work hard.
I do.
One final.
My medical research needs more studies.
One final fact about Al-Mansur that I loved is that he was notoriously frugal, and he had the nickname Abu al-Duanik, which means the father of small change. Which I just think is so, it's such a diss.
It's kind of, is or like he just had a lot of pocket change.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like
Hang on, Abu.
Al-Duanik.
Al-Duanik.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that
yeah,
with people.
Yeah, it's really good. The yeah. father of small change.
Yeah.
He was said to know everything that was happening in his empire, from social unrest to the price of figs. And I guess it paid off, because when he died, the caliphate's treasury contained 14 million dinars, which is, of course, 600 million dirhams.
You know what they say? look after the dirhams and the dinars will take care of themselves.
Exactly. So there you go. That's just a little bit about the establishment of the Abbasid Caliphate, Al-Mansur, the founding of Baghdad, and the price of figs.
That's good. Torpenhow Hill.
Excuse me?
Torpenhow Hill is the place name in England. That means Torp means hill.
Uh-huh. Tor.
And how means hill.
Tor is
and
hill.
And how means hill.
Okay.
And so it actually means hill, 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 hill.
Ah, because I thought you were putting some sort of like, Irish curse on me.
No, Torpenhow Hill. And also, it apparently doesn't exist, but it's a... Yeah, so apparently it's like it's an example of a ghost word that people just invented because they thought it'd be funny to invent this word that mean this thing and doesn't exist. So
okay. I have no reaction to this.
Will, it's your go.
This week I'm going to talk about Queen Hildegard, who was the second wife of Charlemagne. And her life is in many ways very remarkable, but also in many ways it is completely typical of many women throughout history who are sadly only chronicled and remembered as a result of who they married and where and to whom they were born, and basically only insofar as their lives were connected with more powerful men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started this podcast wanting to get away from it, and now I realize I've actually just tied myself to two more very powerful men who I will be defined.
The annals of history will have exactly, you as a footnote.
Exactly.
So you'll have much in common with her as I talk about her life.
What was her name? Hildegard?
Hildegard.
Great name.
So she was born around 754, and she was the daughter of a Germanic count called...
Dracula.
He's Romanian.
Chocolate,
wasn't it?
Chocula.
Chocula, Count Chocula.
Romanian.
Yeah, he was a Romanian chocolate. So a Germanic count called Gerald of Kreischgau.
No, there is no one called Gerald in the 8th century.
Gerald?
Oh yeah, that's
it's
better.
With an O, to be fair.
Good.
Gerald of Kreischgau. And at the heart of the reason for her marriage to Charlemagne was the political fact that her father owned large tracts of land in the area.
Huge tracts of land.
Huge tracts. And a tract, as we all know, is about 40 meters square.
Yeah, that's about...
Is that true?
50 million dinar.
50 million dinar. No. And this was in the area ruled by Charlemagne's younger brother, a guy called Carloman. So he was super keen to marry her so he could strengthen his position east of the Rhine and bind the local nobility to his side. So,
this is pre-Holy Roman Empire?
Yes.
Because he was crowned in 800?
That's right.
Okay.
And then Charlemagne's brother died suddenly, and so it became even more important to try to both incorporate his brother's lands into his, like, Charlemagne.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Core kingdom.
Yeah.
Then also to try and weaken the claim on the throne of his brother's children, his nephews.
Yeah.
So as a
Nephews.
That's right.
They inherit.
What's up here?
From earlier, we were talking about uncles and nephews. Nephews are historically very important.
This is true. Yeah. They're a threat is what they are.
That's why I don't have any.
So the wedding between Charlemagne and Hildegard took place sometime before the 30th of April, 771, after the end of his marriage to his previous wife, the Lombardian Princess Desiderata, which is a great name. And so you can do the math Mattox here. Mm-hmm. She was born in 754. Yeah. The wedding was 771. Uh-huh. So that would make her age...
17?
Exactly, yep. Right. Yet history is completely emphatic in recording that she was 12 or 13 when she got married.
Oh.
So which is a testament to both how appalling the society was at the time and also how dumb history is.
Yeah. Unless there was like a weird gap in the 760s where a bunch of years just disappeared.
You to hold that thought. Oh. Anna McCauley.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, Will. Please continue.
I'm holding it.
Wait, hang on. Are we suggesting... Okay, we'll come... I'm not going against this.
Oh, we are. We're not just suggesting, Will. We're asserting.
Good God. Okay, so girls at the time could be married anytime after puberty. And in Roman law, which the church was super into upholding, any age after 12 was deemed acceptable at the
cool.
time.
Cool.
Yeah, completely fine, apparently. So in the subsequent 12 years of marriage, Hildegard had 8 pregnancies, including one set of twins. And she accompanied Charlemagne on many of his military campaigns. And she gave birth to her second child and her first daughter, Adelaide, during the siege of Pavia, the capital of the Lombards in 774, but the child then died on the return home to France. And she accompanied her husband as far as Aquitaine, where she gave birth to twin boys Louis and Lothar.
I like that she was just like on a birth tour around Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess she was just pregnant constantly.
Well, this is the main thing that's recorded about her life. Yeah. You know, is like where she gave birth to these children.
Yeah,
wow. And in 780 she travels with Charlemagne and 4 of their children to Rome, where the sons Louis and Carloman were then appointed sub kings of Aquitaine and Italy, respectively.
King of the submarines.
King of the king of.
Or the sandwiches.
Yeah.
King of the Sun.
King of the Euros.
And this was all about strengthening the alliance between the Carolingians, the papacy, and everyone else he wanted to try and strengthen the alliance with as he built up
his area. Neptune, god of the sea.
Mm-hmm. And Neptune, god of the sea.
Famously fickle god. Switched alliances a lot.
Who lived in a submarine.
Well, no, you apparently. Had to visit him with his submarine.
Of course.
Yeah, well, don't be an idiot.
And there's a lovely oblique reference in the history books to their sex life, which records that, ooh. Quote, because of her frequent pregnancies, it can be presumed that Hildegard accompanied her husband on very many of his campaigns. which is, I guess, nice. A nice thing, I suppose. So during the time that she was pregnant with twins in 778, Hildegard then established a big interest in astronomy. And while with Charlemagne on his Spanish campaign, it was believed that she was the astronomer that is mentioned by the chronicles at the time, which is pretty cool and is literally the only detail of any kind of personal interest or personality that history affords her.
Yep.
Everything else is just in her capacity as someone who births other people.
As a breed mare.
So it's just appalling, really.
It is appalling, but I'm very glad that she liked astronomy.
Exactly. And this person, who we think was Hildegard, also mapped then the locations of where Charlemagne was camped along on his marches on the campaign. So it's nice that the history at least affords her one point of personality, basically, in the whole thing.
It's just like, I don't know, I can just imagine this poor young girl traipsing around muddy Europe campaign after campaign.
And honestly, she was better off than 99%
And her only respite was now and again, thing. I don't know what it is.
She was treated pretty well with, I think, as well. So polygamy was really common at the time in that particular part of
So you're saying she treated really well. Polygamy was a thing.
but she was monogamously married to Charlemagne during her life.
But he got to fuck about, right?
No, we think not. So we think they were pretty faithful to each other.
And then
until her death, sadly. So she died in 783. According to Paul, the deacon, in the wake of her last childbirth.
Yeah.
So, which I guess you could kind of see that coming with child after child at the time.
You know where she would have loved to go?
Cornwall.
Baghdad.
Oh, yeah,
she would have loved it. Learning. Astronomers all over the shop.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And she was buried the following day in the Abbey of Saint Arnaud in Metz. And following the wishes of Charlemagne, near her grave were burning candles, and daily prayers were said for her soul. So, generally, he was genuinely quite sad about.
That's actually pretty nice.
But there you have it. So, I think it's just worth recording her life, really, because she. Almost nothing was said about her personality during the whole thing. There's one little nugget in there of who she actually was shining through. There you are, Queen Hildegard, wife of Charlemagne.
Queen Hildegard,
I bet that deep down she knew one day she would be discussed on a podcast by three absolute buffoons. And well, I bet it gave her some hope.
You know, you're right. I mean, people just completely disregarded her, like in history and also probably during her life quite a bit. And now here she is.
Now she's been
thoroughly disrespected.
The greatest honor
a
human could have.
Wow. Amen. In the shadow of Charlemagne.
Well said.
Speaking of Charlemagne, today, remember that thought that you were holding?
Yep.
Still holding it?
That time disappeared?
Time disappeared. So first of all, I need to embark on a journey.
Okay.
Right? So we're going on a journey through time, which is the concept of this whole thing. Uh-huh. But not just through time, but about time.
Uh-huh.
And right. First of all, I want to explore a little corner of Austria in a place called Kremunster and the establishment of Kremunster Abbey. And so we're going to go there, conceptually, not physically. I don't think Ryanair goes there. But I need you to join me, please. So off we trot. The founding of Kremunster Abbey in 777 AD.
Will, did you forget to drop acid? Because I definitely forgot, but I think Ant's ahead of
us. Bavarian nobleman Tassilo III. Oh, he founded it. He is a Benedictine monastery located in Upper Austria. The abbey served as a religious and cultural center for the region. Tassilo loved setting up monasteries, had loads of money, he was a duke. And it promoted Christianity, this you know, burgeoning Christianity in the region, and nurturing education and scholarship. Over the centuries, Kremunster Abbey, it flourished. It gained renown for its extensive library, which I think is hilarious because it's probably just like different copies of the Bible.
Yeah, what else are you going to put in a library?
But as an educational institute, attracting scholars from far and wide. And it's actually still, you know, today it remains a cherished cultural and historical landmark. So it's sort of stood the test of time. But during this time, Duke Tassilo III is in this political landscape during his reign where the tides of power in Europe are shifting, and in the early medieval period. And he's a prominent figure in the Aglofing dynasty, which was ruling as the Duke of Bavaria. And he retained diplomatic relations with the Carolingian dynasty. Mm-hmm. So that was led by Charles Martel. Mm-hmm. And then later, the very famous, married to Queen Hildegard, Charlemagne, who sought to exact control over Germanic regions. So while initially the Duke was able to maintain some autonomy, Tassilo III eventually faced accusations, was summoned, and he was summoned by Charlemagne, and was faced accusations of rebellion and treason, and he had to submit to Charlemagne's authority, and Bavaria was incorporated into the Carolingian Empire. Mm. So this is sort of how Austria came part of the fold, and it wasn't through necessary direct conflict and war, but it was because the power they just saw, they're completely overwhelmed by this Carolingian dynasty, and we're able to like just completely just get folded in.
Cool.
Okay, so quick question. Uh-huh. Charlemagne,
yeah, was he a time traveler?
True.
Maybe did he exist?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we sure?
Pretty sure.
Okay. Follow-up question.
Oh, God.
What year is it?
So currently?
Currently, what year it is? Is it?
2016.
It's not 2016.
2023.
Or, is it 1724?
Oh, is this Pope Gregory?
Oh, Pope fucking Gregory.
Yeah.
Let me introduce you the phantom time theory. So, the phantom time theory. So, this theory.
Sorry, hang on. Just to clarify, are we still.
We're still talking about 777.
An abbey still.
Yeah. So, we started an abbey, we've gotten to Charlemagne, and now we've transgressed across sort of liminal space and time to talk about the concept of time itself.
Okay.
And
so the answer to my question is no. It's no longer about an abbey. It's now about something totally different.
No, it's all tied together.
Right, okay.
In one
strap
web
in,
of
people,
lie.
Here we go.
Okay, so the phantom time theory is a theory that suggests that a 297-year period from about 614 to 911 AD didn't exist.
9/11, suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. It was entirely fabricated or misdated on purpose or otherwise by historians. Therefore, the current year is something like 1724.
So, but what about all the things that happened?
Did they, though? Did they? And this coincides with what we call the Dark Ages, when there is actually precious little recorded.
Except in the region that I just talked about.
Well, look at you with your regions. Okay. Time flows in different ways. Anyway, so the motives, right? While I have the soapbox behind the alleged conspiracy, are attributed to the Holy Roman Emperor Otto III and Pope Sylvester II and the Byzantine Emperor Constantine VII, who sought to legitimize their reigns by linking them to significant historical periods. So this is sort of backwards in looking back in time at this time and saying, okay, we need to have a better lineage of our rules and stuff like that. So let's come up with this. So there's several claims in this. Firstly, it suggests the missing years, as I mentioned, and rendered figures like Charlemagne and the Carolingian Empire misaligned with history, or potentially completely fictitious. I don't necessarily believe that, but misaligned with history. So they argue because the Gregorian calendar's introduction in 1582 aimed to obscure these missing years and align historical timelines with the fabricated narrative, such as it was. And so effectively, this theory is suggesting that this whole time span was kind of a bit more misaligned than it was. And then the phantom time theory comes into effect.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
So, okay.
No, yeah. So let's just explore this.
Yeah.
No questions.
Otto, Constantine VII,
yeah.
And some other guy.
Pope Sylvester II.
Pope Sylvester II decided to erase 300 years of history because they wanted to align their rule with more important times?
They wanted to rule... No, they didn't erase history. They just changed history so that they can have a more legitimate rule. It makes total sense. I don't understand why you can't understand any of this.
But okay, well, can I? Yeah, I've just got a couple of questions.
Yep.
So there's quite a lot of history recorded from 400 to 700.
I mean, sure. Yes.
No. Sorry, Will. Famously, we're talking about 690s.
Whatever. 670 to
614
to 911. Yeah.
614 to 911.
Okay. 614 to 911.
Name one thing that happened. Other than the two things you just discussed.
Yeah, like so much happened.
Look.
We should have had Ant go first, then we wouldn't have had to do our things.
Look, this is absolute bananas theory. I don't actually believe in it.
Yes, you do. I see the fire in your eyes.
Do you know what would be great?
What would be good?
If we as a podcast decide to subscribe to this theory and therefore refuse to cover any years between...
It would give us like 300 less years to do.
690 to 911.
It would be great.
But like, it just goes to show, I just stumble across this. So this is too hilarious that people... And there probably is some misalignments of dates and some misremember, but a grand conspiracy covering all aspects of the globe that was using Gregorian calendar is just too much.
Which, like, it falls down at so many stages.
Of course it does. And like, you know, astronomical observations, you know, are cited as supporting factors because there was no, like, you know, sort of these comments that come around at certain periods.
Yeah.
They've always been recorded in history,
yeah,
but they're not recorded in some parts of the world at some parts of the Dark Ages.
Right.
And that's like, oh, gold smoking
gun.
That's it. Anyway, so in conclusion...
Classic.
While the founding of Kremunster Abbey sheds life on sick... Lies.
Sorry, we're back to the Abbey. What do you mean we're back to the Abbey?
Yeah, Will, your problem is you're thinking of time as too linear, and especially during Ant segments, it's best to think of it as just sort of a swirling
melange.
Mass.
Look, so what happened is we were talking about a building,
Ant
dropped some acid, and now we're back to this building.
Yeah.
This is madness.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not saying I did a lot of research. I'm not saying I wrote a very coherent script, but what I am saying is that most of what I said didn't happen.
Certainly.
Okay, look.
Podcast in a nutshell.
Effectively, what it is just a sneak peek at the start of Charlemagne's rise to power and how he was able to use political intrigue to gather areas around him and then later on maybe a pope who lied about a calendar.
Is that what it's about?
That's what it's about.
That's amazing.
You talked about city planning.
Amazing. Well, since it is not the year 2023, but rather sometime in the 1700s, mm-hmm. I've got to go have a baby.
Yes, you do. Yeah,
so
yeah,
we
yeah.
should wrap it up.
Yeah, I've actually got to bring in the harvest and give it to my liege lord, Will.
that tracks.
His tithing needs to be paid.
Good.
That was a bit unhinged.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Linear Time. That is everything you'd ever need to know about the year 777, if it did exist.
We'll never know.
We maybe, can't prove.
Maybe not. So, Will, can you please pick us a year that did exist from the random number generator?
No, the random number generator will pick the year. Sorry, I will respectfully power it up and request that it picks reverence. A year.
Yes, yeah, good. Yes.
And for the next episode, the next year will be 1519.
Amazing.
Ooh.
1208. 1519, that's great. 1519,
closest to Shakespeare we've probably been,
is
right?
It? Yeah. Okay, cool.
The year of the discovery of Washington, D.C.,
is that true?
I don't think so.
I don't know, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Again, discovery like, with a massive asterisk.
That was 1994 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's been discovered. It might still be a swamp.
There you go.
See you next time.
Great, see you then.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.